Hi, you're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us today on Boggy Talk. We have some very special guests.
Very special.
The Jeffersons. Hey,
guys. Hey, guys.
Welcome. So the Jeffersons have been members of Church on Bayshore since
2020.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And in what year did God call you to international missions?
Well, what year did he call us is different than what year we went. So that might be part of our story a little bit. So I grew up in a home very outward nation focused. Mm-hmm. And I was going to short-term trips in the summers a lot. I even spent, I think, 6 weeks was the longest I ever spent overseas. But one trip in college, our missions pastor, he looked at our group of maybe 15 college students, and he said, I feel like God is going to call some of you into full-time ministry doing this. Mm-hmm. And I knew in that moment, like for the first time, I was like, oh my goodness, he is talking to me. And I felt that, and I held on to it, I wrote it down, and I didn't know what to do with it yet because I was still in school, I was in college, finishing a degree, and ended up graduating, going and working a job in Texas for a few years, and then God opened a door very, very wide open that was unexpected timing-wise, but I ended up going, well, they call it midterm, for 2 years with our organization to Italy. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first longer than, you know, a summer or something, experience with missions. And then we actually left and went to North Africa together in 2024, January. But those 2 years overseas is how I met him. And so God used that obedience of me going to introduce us, and we were long distance for 2 years during this time. But God was preparing us and shaping us into, you know, who we would need to be. So,
yeah. So for me, I did not grow up in a family that traveled internationally or anything. It was very far from my mind to actually be doing this.
Right.
But in college, I was challenged to read the book Radical. Mm-hmm. And so I read that, and a family in my home church was going, like, the father was just taking off from work for 3 months, and they were doing a summer, or I don't know how long it was, but doing a summer overseas. Yeah. And they had, it was just kind of a challenge, like reading that book and then seeing them. And I was like, okay, I felt like you need to do that. Like, mm-hmm. you need to, you know, go step outside of your context is kind of one of the calls in that book. And so I did that. That was my first time overseas, was a summer in Nepal.
Wow.
And then from there, kind of coming back, continuing in college and being very uncertain of how I can reconcile my plan for my life and what I feel like I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so through the year, those couple of years, God made it very clear that I want your obedience and I want you to set your plans aside. And so I started making steps to go overseas. I ended up going to seminary, ended up meeting, crossing paths as we were going to both do two-year terms. And then when we met,
just crossed paths. And you were like, hey, where are you going?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
We're like, wow, we're going to be far apart, but we'll see if it works. Right. And if it works, then it was the Lord.
Yeah.
So Sue was in Europe. I was in Central Asia. And when we kind of started, you know, building a relationship, it was always under the understanding that, like, this is what we want to do long term.
Yeah. Mm,
that's awesome. Yeah. So you got married, and mm-hmm. then you landed back here in Okaloosa, which was home-ish for you. You're mm-hmm. living in Crestview, and this was, you know, your family lived somewhere else, mm-hmm. and you kind of scattered a little bit. And then God led you guys to North Africa. Mm-hmm. So you didn't know that's where you're going to end up. It wasn't like, this is what's written on our hearts. I remember conversations with you guys. You're like, we don't know. but he led you there. So why don't we talk about how that happened?
Yeah. So, well, going back to when we first started dating and kind of getting into a relationship, I knew from early on that I felt like the Lord had laid it on my heart to work with Muslims. Mm-hmm. And so she was good with that. It was going to be something completely different than what she had been, a completely different culture than what she had been working with. Mm-hmm. But so that was kind of one of our starting points. And so when you are looking at the world, there's a whole lot of countries that could include.
Yeah. Right.
And then from there, we just kind of worked into some different aspects of it.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that if you go with our company, it's just like the military. They just send you and mm-hmm. you just say, "Here I am, Lord," and you go.
Yeah.
But there's actually they actually want to, you know, work with you. And where are you looking? And you kind of mm-hmm. interview the people that you're going to potentially work with, and mm-hmm. they are interviewing you back, trying to make sure it's a good match.
Yeah.
And so we got in touch with a few different teams, and the one that we landed on was the one that we were like, we just feel like we click with this leader mm-hmm. couple.
Yeah.
And we had
asked, like, where is there great need? Mm-hmm. Like, we want to be where there's need. We're mm-hmm. open. Now, one of the caveats to that was, like, I'm hyper social, outgoing. So if it was a country where I had to be with, like, an escort, or
yeah.
because it was unsafe for women, mm-hmm. we didn't want to do that because we knew I wouldn't be able to really be myself in
yeah.
that culture context. So we eliminated a few countries, but besides that, there were a ton of options. And we were just like, okay, where's their need? And we ended up in one of the countries where they're like, we have a ton of need here. There are people, like, open and interested, and just we need more workers for the harvest. Mm-hmm. So we chatted with teams, and yeah, we clicked with one a lot and decided to go.
Yeah.
We had never been to this country before. I had never been to Africa in general before.
Yeah.
I had never been to a Muslim country. Like, it was so new for both of us, but especially for me.
Mm. So what is daily life like for you guys over there?
So right now we're in the process of learning language, Arabic, one of the Arabics. It's a long process.
Yeah.
So we have basically 4 years to get to, what's the level we have to get to?
We have to get to like a low fluency, like a low advance. But really the goal is to get higher than that. Mm-hmm. To disciple well, mm-hmm. you need at least a mid or high advanced level.
Mm-hmm.
So the company requires us to get to a low advance, but the goal is to get to higher than mm-hmm. that. So they give us a lot of time and resources through, you know, the giving of Lottie Moon. All of that giving mm-hmm. goes towards things like language learning and childcare while we're in language mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
So the majority of our focus right now is language. So in the mornings, most days, or I guess every weekday, mm-hmm. we're in language. And then in the afternoons, we'll pick up Josiah. And sometimes we trade off or going to a park or meeting a friend or just going out trying to meet strangers mm-hmm. and practice our language, but most importantly, you know, getting the opportunity to share with people, share the gospel.
Wow.
So you talked about going to a country where, you know, you could be, you know, not have to go with an escort for the safety. So what is it like with you guys and your dynamic? You know, mm-hmm. You guys shared at a luncheon. You guys aren't able to do things together as much. So let's just talk about that. What does it look like? Mm-hmm. In the day-to-day, just ministry in general and trying to reach people.
Yeah. Well, from a safety aspect, it's safe for us. I mean, there's probably some neighborhoods that we wouldn't go into, but we don't know about them, so we don't go over there.
You just go anyway. You're just naive. Like, we're fine. The Lord has gone before us, right?
No.
Yeah, we live in the center of the city, and it's very safe. It's a little more upscale compared to kind of the outskirts. And so we live right next to a government building and a police station.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, but most of our ministry is separate. Like, women stay with women, men stay with men. Even in homes, like, if we go to someone's home for dinner or, you know, like the midday kind of tea and snacks,
mm-hmm.
usually it's me going with the wife and her friends or her family. My husband probably wouldn't be coming with me mm-hmm. for that. He would maybe be staying with the men, maybe in a separate room, maybe at a different time. So things like that. On rare occasion, we have some couple friends who we hang out with together, but mm-hmm. that is usually because they are not considering themselves to be devout Muslims or even mm-hmm. Muslims at all. So it is very different dynamic being married but not doing ministry together.
Yeah.
With our son, one of us will take him maybe for a house visit or to the park. And if we're together, we might just engage men and women separately. Mm-hmm. We're not usually going to engage them together. Yeah. So
that is really different. So, like, there's no, like, dinner parties where you're just inviting the neighbors over and
wow.
such a different
yeah.
mindset, you know, which is a good adjustment, right. right?
And, yeah, we even asked our language tutor about this. We said, do couples ever, like, do double dates? Like, will a mm-hmm. married couple invite another married couple and have dinner? And she said, very rarely.
Wow.
You will not see that because there's so much jealousy in their culture. Mm-hmm. There's so much of non-trusting. Oh, if I'm with another couple, the husband's not going to trust that husband to not look at my wife in a different way or to flirt. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a different dynamic. And it's kind of sad because we enjoy hanging out with couples and doing games. And we do find that. And sometimes there's siblings and they'll hang out with us together. We have a sibling pair that we mm-hmm. we invite over and they'll come and play games with us. But that is definitely the exception, not the norm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's not like family gatherings with – where do the kids usually stay with the mother? Figure mm-hmm. then?
Yeah. Okay. Normally the kids are with the mom. If you're family, it's different.
Okay.
So like if there's a group of mixed, you know, couples mm-hmm. and there's a big group, you can know like, okay, they're family, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're just hanging out, it's going to be separate. And even in some families, the men are on this side and the women are on this side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unusual for us.
So you guys have lots to talk about whenever you go back to your house then.
Well, right now we're together a lot for language. So
gotcha. Okay.
But we're starting to do more separated. And so mm-hmm. we get to share. Oh, how was that time, that meetup with your friend?
Yeah.
How is your, going out? We try to go out with our team, women with women and men with men mm-hmm. and share. And then we get to share about it when we get home, which is really fun.
Yeah.
And she'll learn something new and she'll be like, listen what I learned. And then I'll learn something new. And I'll be like, listen to this.
Yeah, it's all new. So you had mentioned earlier, do you have ministry partners there with you or are you guys just there by yourself?
Yeah. So we're a part of a team. We do some things together. We try to go out together and mm-hmm. Are kind of there to encourage one another in the work. And, it's a big blessing for sure.
And we have house church together on Sundays.
Okay.
And so we get to worship in English together. And mm-hmm. there's a few other expats that join our team. So we're maybe 15 to 20 on Sunday mornings. And so we do have community there in our team. We do a lot together as a team. There's other kids, and so our son gets to hang out with their kids and kind of have that dynamic of a TCK, a third culture kid, where he's not from our culture, but he's also not growing up in where we grew up. So he's kind of this mix of two, and so they call it, they used to call it an MK, missionary kid, but now they call it a third culture kid. Kind of in between cultures. So it's nice that he does have that community with those other, TCKs. So
yeah.
Well, that's so important, I think, because especially the city you're in isn't small, but it's not a huge international city. And so like for here in the U.S., like if you don't, like if you have a team that you're a part of at work, like if you're not like, if you don't like them, at least you only work with them. And then you have community elsewhere.
Right, yeah.
But you guys in this dynamic, especially when your community outside of quote-unquote work mm-hmm. Can't really be together, mm-hmm. it's really important that you like your team, that you've got some interactions where you're like, they're healthy and you like to be together and it's not just you have to tolerate the time together. That's huge. And I think probably something that most of us don't think about in terms mm-hmm. of that, the life you're living overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're super grateful, like I said, for the team that we're a part of. They say the number one thing that brings people back off the field is finances. With our organization that's supported by this church and others, mm-hmm. that's not an issue. The second thing, worldwide for IMS is teaming.
Team conflict,
It's hard. You definitely can be hard. See that.
Which is why when we were kind of interviewing, we were like, we're willing to go anywhere, but we want to make sure we click with our team and enjoy each other and feel like there's a like a healthy friendship, and we don't have to be best friends, but they had so much wisdom, and they were very much on the same page as us, as with us, as what our vision was, and you know how we live life, and just managerial style and stuff. So
yeah, and a lot of prayer.
Yeah,
and a lot
yeah.
of prayer.
Say, yes, it's true for sure. So wow. So where you guys are, just geographically and culturally, everything. What are some challenges that you face with the gospel going forward there?
Well, people have been taught from when they were infants that Jesus is not who the Bible says he is, mm-hmm. says it is, and that the Bible has been corrupted. So that's like starting off is just really hard from that perspective, because yeah. they see us as people that have been deceived, and the Quran comes behind the Bible and corrects all of the mistakes that have been inserted in it over the last 1,000 years or so. Mm-hmm. So that's one big thing.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of broke it down into three big things. So that's one. Second thing, they are actually highly discouraged from seeking anything else. Mm-hmm. So if they ask questions, they're told, do not ask questions. Mm-hmm. You need to believe and have faith and have trust. If you don't believe, if you ask questions, you will receive a greater punishment. So I have a friend who is kind of discipling a young girl who's seeking, and she learned from her that her family taught, if you question what you believe, when you go to hell, your skin burns off, peels, and then you start over, and it's this continual cycle because of your lack of faith and asking questions. So she was taught, I don't want to ask questions. I'm scared of this horrible punishment that I'm going to receive. But it's just, there's so many scare tactics, and there's so much fear that they're so scared to even ask or question what they believe, and they don't really know why they believe it. If you ask them, why do you believe the Bible is corrupted, or who corrupted it, they don't know how to answer it. Mm-hmm. They're just like, well, that's what it is. That's what we learned, and that's it.
But in their defense, in a sort of way, it's not just religion that they do that with.
It's
anything. Yes. Mm. You're taught, you don't ask questions.
Yeah.
This is what it is. A lot of, like, they do a lot of memorization in their education. It's just rogue memory. Mm-hmm. You recite it back to me, you get the A, or you get the, you know, whatever grade you earn. But it's not about engaging the ideas, even if it's not religion. So when you move into religion, it kind of all makes sense.
That's a great point. They haven't even been taught critical thinking
skills. Yeah, I was just thinking that, that freedom of thought. Yeah, it's just not valued.
Like they are so surprised that we love reading books. They're like, why do you read books? I'm like, I like to read books about parenting, about, you know, how to be a better wife. And blows their mind. They're like, you read books about this? And they hear things passed down, and that's just what they take as truth. Yeah. And there's a lot of wives' tales, you know, and you just see how that can snowball in the culture of, if I have a headache, I think I'm going to die because my head hurts and it feels like it's going to explode, and I have no idea that I'm just dehydrated because someone told me that I have to go to the hospital when my head hurts. Like, it's just, I mean, I'm giving you like kind of the extreme side of that, but you do see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a lot of basic things. You're like, you have the internet. they use ChatGPT too, but it's just so not in their culture to go and research and find things like, why do I believe this? Why do I do this?
Well, the education stops for most people a lot younger than it does in the States.
True.
So that also kind of plays into it.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of people never finish high school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So that was
so that was two.
Number two.
Okay,
was
so was that the third?
The third one.
Keeping us on track.
I'm like, 1, 2, 3. Can you say it again? Okay.
So the third thing that really keeps people is the persecution. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it's, In our specific context, it's social persecution.
Yeah.
So if somebody comes to the Lord, generally the government's not going to stay out of it unless they just go onto the sidewalk and start yelling, you know, talking it up.
Or trying to translate the Quran.
Yeah.
That was a big no-no.
That is a big no-no.
Oh,
but,
really?
But specifically, social persecution. So your friends, your family, they might disown you. You know, you might get kicked out of your house if you're In our culture and most Arab cultures, when you're not until you're married, you live with your family, and sometimes after that also. But so if you're single and you come to the Lord, you don't have a place to live. Your job might be associated with your family, and if it's not, most likely, the people that are employing you are of their faith, and they might find a reason to get rid of you. So it's pretty difficult in that aspect.
So have you found, just like in conversations with people, ways to kind of, is it just like you're trying to build relationships with people to earn their trust? Like, how do you combat
that? Yeah, how are
you
engaging?
Yeah.
Well, we have, there's two different branches of that. One branch is we do a lot of, we call it broad seed sowing. So we're trying to just go out, share the gospel broadly. Specifically, we go out at least minimum once a week with, you know, the women of our team and then the men of our team separately to just go out for the purpose of sharing the gospel with couple people or a group of people or, you know,
with
individuals,
strangers.
Yeah. You meet them. We use kind of this method called the NE3. So you're getting connected with them. It might be a 5-minute connection. It might be a 2-minute connection. You just and then getting into spiritual conversation, which is very easy there because their religion is so ingrained in the culture. Mm. So it's not weird for within 2 or 3 minutes of a conversation for them to ask you, oh, are you Muslim? Mm. Or for us to ask them, what do you believe? Like, how do you practice your faith? And then they love to talk about it. And then getting to sin and then getting to Jesus. Getting to Jesus is the hard, the sticky part for sure. Mm. And then getting to a response. So we try to do that every week, minimum once, 2-3 times. And then there's our continuous long-term relationship. So people we meet at the gym, people we see at the grocery store, you know, neighbors that we're engaging every day or multiple times a week that we've shared with. We try to share within the first 1 or 2 meetings with people just so that we don't feel like we're duping people. Oh, I'm going to become your friend and then a year in, I'm all of a sudden going to share the gospel with you. No, we want to try to share immediately and then build on those relationships. So we do have some relationships that are quick. One day we shared with them and, you know, we might never see them again. Mm-hmm. And then we have those people that we shared with, but we're continuing to have a relationship with them.
Yeah, we kind of say that you can have a relationship with somebody even if it's 3 or 5 minutes. You can get to know them. You can understand where they're coming from, and then you can share from that perspective. So everything is kind of relational because you don't just go up to a stranger and say, hey, Jesus loves you. Like, you don't just like start from there, but you get to know them. And, you know, but it might not take a week. It might take 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the lies that we can believe here in our context.
That's so true.
Workers can believe in our context too,
for
that
sure.
I have to have a, you know, solid relationship with them. But like my wife said, if you start a relationship and you leave God out of it and then you try to insert it a week or a month later, it's going to be weird. It's going to be inauthentic. It's going
to feel
odd.
Especially to them, they're going to have major red flags.
Yeah, because this is a major part of who we are. So why would we not? We're not going to hide the fact that we have a son, you know. They're going to know that pretty quickly if they get to know us.
Yeah.
And they're going to get to know our God pretty quickly if they get to know us, too.
That's a good point. I think, you know, as you said that, it made me kind of chuckle because I used to even just, you know, here in the States, a typical question you ask somebody right when you meet them is, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And I used to just be like, oh, I hate that part of the conversation because once somebody finds out I'm a pastor, they just immediately categorize me. Mm-hmm. Like, are they like, they either like clam up or they get awkward, or they're like, well, let me tell you everything, which is, I prefer the latter.
My granddad used to be a pastor.
That's right. Yeah. And then they're like, they try to find some way to, you get put in this. And so I used to be like, I'm just not going to bring it up. And until, you know, and hopefully, but what I found is like, it's better just to be like, that's a natural, because if you wait, then they find out later. I feel like there's a tendency to be like, why didn't you tell me that?
Yeah.
Like, if you believe that's true, don't you want to tell me the truth? You know, that's right.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what are some of the joys, just delights that you guys have had just being specifically there in the culture that you're reaching?
And we ask this because so many times people are like, tell me how terrible and hard it is. And I know like there are difficulties, but also there's beautiful, wonderful things. So that's why we asked that question.
I love it. No, that's great. We love our city. We really do. We're on the coast. I think when I thought North Africa, I thought desert.
Yeah.
But our country is very long, and there is some desert, but there's also mountains. There's also coast. So there's a lot to it, and we are in a really beautiful place. The weather's really nice, and Tyler can talk about the people. But just geographically, it's a great, a family-friendly place to live. So,
yeah. Also, I mean, culturally, it's a very warm place. So you can sit down on a park bench next to a stranger and start a conversation. And actually, a lot of people, like, if there's two park benches and one has a man on it and one doesn't,
it's weirder for you to be on the empty one.
It's weird for you to go to the empty one because it's a communal.
It's very un-American.
It's so different.
And we don't even like to park next to someone who's not in their car.
Well, even at church, people like won't scoot in. They're like, we need at least three seats in between.
Go to the beach.
The beach.
So
it's
if you
comical.
Go to the beach, it paints the picture so perfectly. So like we'll be sitting somewhere and we get there early, so we don't have the option to sit next to somebody because 9 o'clock at the beach is early.
Very early for
them. So we'll go sit, you know, somewhere. And the idea is like, okay, like we have our space, you know, the American idea. And then people, they'll come all the way and sit right next to you, right in front of you, right around you. Because we're like, we're together.
We're all here together.
Wow.
And you're kind of looking around going, there's so much space, and you choose this spot right next to me. But they're so generous, hospitable. They'll share their food with you. Mm-hmm. They'll come up, do you have bread? We can have breakfast together. You know, you have tea? We'll share tea with you. You know, I've had girls give me all their lunch for the day because we were sitting next to them, mm-hmm. sharing the gospel with them, and they just give us their food. And we're like, no, don't, we're mm-hmm. good. We ate. No, I insist. It's like for them, their culture would shame them for not giving us their food because they're not being generous and hospitable. Even though we have so much more, it doesn't matter. They're going to give us everything they have. And it's we can learn a lot from them, hospitality-wise. We can learn so much from them.
Wow.
Is there anything – sorry, I'm going to interject a question we didn't prep you with. Is there anything culturally that at first you were like, this is so weird or so peculiar that now you, like, have lived there, you're like, I get why it's this way? Funny or even just – and I'll give an example to buy you some time. And if you can't think of anything, it's fine. So, like, I remember when living in Korea, like, in almost all the apartments, there's heat in the floor. It's amazing, the onduli heating. All the floors were, like, this yellow linoleum. And, like, everywhere. I was like, why is every floor yellow? It's an ugly shade of yellow. I was like, this is absurd. Like, that was my mentality. And then I read a book, and it was, like, a fictional book, but it was an account of, like, historical Korea, and it was talking about the mud that they used to build their houses with and where it came from in this river, that it was yellow. It's like, it all made sense. This is why their floors are yellow, because historically the floors have been yellow because it was the color of the mud. I was like, I'm so judgmental about floor colors when this is just like a beautiful thing
their
in their
history.
Culture and completely normal to them. They would come here and be like, why do you have anyway, just anything like that?
I don't know.
Off the top of your head?
Sort of light bulb moment. I don't know.
I'm sure we've had them, but it's hard to think of them on the spot.
Did you expect the hospitality part?
I had heard that Arab cultures are very hospitable, but I had never lived in one. And now I lived in Italy, and they're very hospitable, but I don't think to the point of the Arab culture.
Yeah.
I sort of expected it from Central Asia. It's all the same sort of generosity and hospitality.
I don't know. I'm trying
I don't
to
know.
Think of
We're
something.
Letting down.
That's fine.
If we think of something, we'll add it in. I got one.
I mentioned that light bulb moment the other day about why men have.
Yeah.
I could
that's
share
a good
that.
One. Yeah, you should
share that. That blew my mind. Okay, so we've been there almost 2 years, and every now and then I'll see an older gentleman that will have like a scar here, and I always thought
on the forehead.
On your forehead,
And I was thinking, you know, okay, there used to be some procedure back in the day. Yeah. It left this ugly scar, kind of like bless his heart. Like everybody has to see that, and he has to live with it. Well, just a few weeks ago, almost 2 years in, I asked my friend, I'm like, what procedure did these guys, what did they have done that like caused that when they were, infants or whatever? He was like, no. That's from kneeling down and praying. And so after decades of praying five times a day and hitting your head to the carpet, you get this mark, which it's debated whether or not it's from God or actually from bacteria from the carpet.
We've heard it's from bacteria from our believing friends.
But not that that matters.
It's actually fungus. It's fungus. Fungus in their head. But
the
we haven't researched that.
The point is, it's an honor.
It's an honor. Yeah. Okay.
Because that's from praying.
It's a symbol of your prayer.
So I was able, when I learned that, I was just mind blown. Yeah. And then I start thinking about the Pharisees who are worried about the outside and what's going on inside and not talking about.
So. Yeah. Man. Wow. Yeah. Real life example. That's very interesting. Cool. So what would you guys say? I mean, it sounds like the Lord really just started planting these seeds in your heart, like long, long time ago, and then how it really came to fruition and looks now, and how it'll even look in the future might be different. But what would you say to a young person, or anyone really, that's considering missions? Not young, maybe they're in the middle of their career.
And young. They could be about to retire from the military.
Absolutely,
a good 30 more years of you know, vital ministry ahead. So
So I mean, the sort of, on the one hand, like the Sunday school answer would be like, it's for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
So what we do, ideally, you know, before we came to where we are, we were doing that, you know, trying to meet people, you know, whether it's the short conversations and trying to get into the gospel conversation, or it's the relational long-term stuff, trying to share there too. But if international missions, I would say, you know, trying to maybe get your feet wet.
Yeah.
Going
we both
somewhere.
Started with short-term trips, and I think it's really hard to think about going from never going anywhere to I'm going to dedicate my life somewhere. Yeah. Neither of us did that. We both had experience going to different places even to feel, is this where God's calling me? Because at first I thought I was going to go to a Latin country because I grew up going to Latin America, Central America with our church fellowship. And so I thought, oh, God's going to have me here. Funny enough, not even close.
Right. Right.
Totally different culture and language. But God was just preparing me kind of to be flexible for wherever, because when I met him, he felt a very strong calling to a specific people group, which not everybody has. Mm-hmm. Some people are just called to go anywhere, and some people feel like they're supposed to go to a certain country or certain people, and, or maybe to an unreached people group, which there are still many of. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, getting your feet wet for sure. And our org, I'm a little plug here, our org has a summer program that you can do and a 2-year program, which is what we both did. Okay. The 2-year program was midterm. The summer is kind of like a short term, you know, if you're in college or something and you just have a summer. But both of those are great experiences.
Yeah.
The one that we did was for young 30s, but there's one for retirees that we've met people that are a part of. But
what was the mantra you said in the earlier? You said,
yeah, we learned, don't ask why should I go, ask why should I stay.
Mm. That's good.
That's good. Yeah.
Just thinking about the billions of people that have never engaged the gospel, and you know, when you look at our city and the amount of believers that are in it and the amount of lostness that there is, it's like you're going out and it's almost like God is allowing this person that you're sharing with, like, to win the lottery that day, because so few people are going to hear the gospel in that day, and they get that opportunity. And just, I don't know, the vast lostness is so motivating to try to recognize. And that's kind of what I had to do in those kind of college years, is recognizing, okay, like, what is the need? Like, what's going to matter in 1,000 years?
Yeah.
And just really trying to dig into some of those ideas. And I read a few different books that really kind of pushed me, like, you know, what this is, what's important. This is what God's calling you to.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, you think, you guys shared at the luncheon a few weeks ago, your city is about 1.5 million people and around 100 known believers. Mm-hmm. So you do the math and you realize that's a fraction of a percent. And so a vast sea of lostness. And then you magnify that across the globe and unreached people groups who don't have access yet. And really our calling as Christians and as the church to all find our role in taking the gospel to the nations. Yeah. Yep.
And the nations are here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We don't have to. We should be going, but we don't have to go to have the opportunity to share.
Yeah.
It's so funny. While we've been here, I feel like my eyes are drawn to anyone wearing a head covering. I'm like, I wonder where she's from. I wonder where they're from. Like, I love engaging Muslims now because they're so willing to talk. And I want to pick people's brains that are here now. Like, what are you doing here? And do you have family back somewhere? And have you, you know, what do you believe? What do they believe? Because, you know, you see both conversions. You see Muslims converting to Christianity and you see Christians. Well, I don't even know what to call them, but you see people, they tell us, oh, we've seen Instagram of people becoming Muslims from Christian. You know, we're like, well,
they might be Westerners,
okay.
But
I don't know about that. But anyways, yeah, I mean, it's so interesting how God, when you're obedient to go, he changes your heart too. Because I had never really done ministry with Muslims. And now I'm like, I want to go talk to that girl covering her hair with a hairdress. And I would have been almost intimidated slash like scared before. Yeah. And for no reason, just because I didn't know what to do.
Right.
I didn't understand. So.
Well, you guys have so much wisdom, and that was just a beautiful story and very, very encouraging. How, to close this out, how can we pray for you all?
Well,
language is a big one. We're going into our third year of language, and it feels, some days feels really good, and some days feels like we're just getting by. Like,
it's a grind.
You just want to snap your fingers and know, but it takes so much time to go from we had zero language to being able to disciple someone. I mean, just imagine all the language and the grammar and the you don't want to say the wrong thing because
like
you don't want to be
in English.
You
know,
exactly. So just for language perseverance, it feels so monotonous to say that every month, but we do feel that and God has been very faithful and we've had amazing language teachers. We're praying for one of our main tutor, who we've had since the very beginning, is not a believer. She has heard the gospel. She's worked with a lot of workers. But we're just praying for her every day because she and I become really good friends. But she's had a lot of hurt, even though she's never been to church, like that church hurt idea. But she's had, like, worker hurt.
Yeah.
Like, workers who only wanted to talk to her if she wanted to do a Bible study kind of thing. And so I think we're just praying that we love her well and that she does come to believe because I think she just needs – everyone needs the gospel, but we want her to really believe. So,
And I would say just perseverance in language, but also just in being there. You know, some days are hard being away from family and your culture and having to deal in another language. Being here the first few days, I was like – thinking to myself,
so
I can go up to the counter and not have to think about what I'm going to say before I get into the conversation. It's so great.
It was overwhelming when we first got here. We were so overstimulated in the airport. We're like, we can understand everybody.
Yeah.
Like,
we
without
can
even trying.
Without trying.
Yeah. Like, it was crazy. Now we're used to it. But
just the perseverance and that God would just continue to be our rock and that would be what keeps us going and keeps us there. And we're just praying for our country and all of North Africa. When you really start looking into Islam and breaking down some of like the problems, that there's just so many problems in Islam. If you were going to make a religion, like I don't know how you would come up with this one because it has so many gaping holes.
Yeah.
And I say that to say, when the Holy Spirit is ready and things start catching, I just feel like it could just fall down so quickly because it's just...
Yeah.
It's such a broken religion.
Absolutely.
And I think kind of propped up with some of the systems you were talking about, like just, you don't question, you just do, propped up by authority, you know, and power.
There's countries where it's illegal not to do the fast at Ramadan. And so, like, you're dealing with, even the government just pushing that on
really
people.
And we just have a burden for the local body. It's very, even though there's 100 to 150 believers in our city, there's not that many are involved in churches.
Yeah.
They're all house churches. There's disunity. There's lack of commitment. Mm-hmm. There's this idea too, like if I go to the church, maybe they'll give me something. And so you're always, you don't want to distrust, but it's hard because people are needy financially and you know, with resources. There's just, you're always sort of doubtful, like, is this really are they really interested, or are they just looking to get something? Mm-hmm. Are they looking for food or money? Or, I mean, and not always, but we have felt, we have experienced that already.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really hard for workers that come from the American culture, and you have a lot of financial blessings that people could never dream of.
Right.
And then you have to balance being generous with causing a stumbling block because, like she said, you don't know. Are they here for Jesus, or are they here to see, maybe I can have a connection to a Westerner, or maybe that can lead to this? And so it's really hard to
You want to be generous. Too, for wisdom and discernment in that, because it's really tricky. Like, I have felt so burdened sometimes. Like, am I not being generous? Like, I want to be generous, but sometimes it's unwise to be abundantly generous because you don't know if they're just going to come back. It's so hard.
Whole helping hurts. The thing part.
And that's real. Right. It's a real problem. Yeah. And so,
well, we are continuing to pray for you guys, and thanks for sharing those things. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your short time in the States to do this, to record it, and encourage people. So,
we loved having you back. Well, thanks for joining us on this special, and we will see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.